afternoon, everyone. My name is Leah Berman. I'm in the Department of Mathematics and Statistics, and I've served on the GERC committee for several years. And I might as well introduce the rest of the folks.
I'm Mary Erlander, Northern Studies and History, and this is my second year on the committee.
Linda Hapsmith, Academic Advising Center since its inception.
Hi, it's good to see you. I'm Sarah Stanley. I'm in the English department and the director of composition, and I sit on the committee to make sure that writing gets its fair due.
So we thought we'd talk a little bit about what the committee was tasked with doing, and then we've developed a proposal, and we're now in the stage where we're letting the proposal out to be discussed by faculty and hopefully improved so that we can come up with a proposal that everyone's happy about or mostly happy with. So a number of years ago, 2008-2009, there was a committee that was developed primarily starting with the administration said, let's make a committee to talk about CORE. This committee had various names, including CRAG, and they prepared a report that went to Faculty Senate in 2009, and Faculty Senate, as a consequence of that report, eventually approved some new learning outcomes. And this was in May of 2011. And these are the learning outcomes that you can see on the website listed under outcomes. So these learning outcomes, they build knowledge of human institutions, sociocultural processes, and physical and natural world by doing some stuff, develop intellectual and practical skills in various ways, acquire tools for effective civic engagement by thinking about various things, and then integrate and apply learning somehow. So these are actually the law of Faculty Senate. They were approved in May of 2011. And as a consequence of having approved these learning outcomes, then this GERC committee was told, okay, we've approved these learning outcomes. Now you figure out how to implement them. So the committee has met in various people on the committee has met for the last several years. And we developed a plan that tries to balance a number of goals. It tries to balance implementing these learning outcomes while meeting the requirements of the Board of Regents, who have policy and regulations about the general education curriculum, and also being sensitive to the credit load of students. So that's what this proposal has tried to do. Hopefully everyone has managed to look at this proposal. But essentially, the proposal says there are four learning outcomes, and we'd like students to take courses that satisfy each of these learning outcomes in various ways. So to satisfy learning outcome one, which was building knowledge, acquire content, we suggest a sort of standard distribution model. You must take one course from each of the following categories. And the categories we're suggesting should be quite broad. A natural science course at the lab, a mathematics course, a course in the arts explicitly, and the arts faculty that we have spoken to feel very strongly that this should be a 1 3-credit course that combines theory and practice as opposed to 3 1-credit courses. A humanities course, two humanities courses to satisfy the Board of Regents regulations, and 2 social science courses. But other than that, we are not suggesting that there be constraints on these courses to satisfy learning outcomes. Learning outcome 2 had to do with acquisition of skills, and Board of Regents regulations also discusses acquisition of skills, so they discuss this quantitative literacy requirements, a writing component, a communication component, and we're saying, okay, you need to take 2 courses in writing. like the current core, a course in communications, like the current core, although it's possible that these could be revised to better meet the needs of learning outcome too. And then a quantitative literacy course, which is something new from the current core, which would be some course that has to do with interacting with numbers and data in a useful way. And what exactly would make a course be a quantitative literacy course would need to be determined. We don't have a setup yet to determine it, but the idea of the committee is, well, math courses probably would count for quantitative literacy, lab science courses probably would count for quantitative literacy, but then there would be other courses across the curriculum that also ought to count for quantitative literacy, such as some of the engineering courses. Statics, you've got to think statics maybe has to do with quantitative literacy, or statistics for psychologists, I forget the correct name of that course, ought to count for quantitative literacy. And the hope is that this would allow students to have more choice for courses so that they could take courses for the core focused on things that meet their interests. Learning outcome 3 is a new kind of distribution requirement. The learning outcome passed by Faculty Senate sort of had several pieces to it that they thought students should achieve. Intercultural confidence and diversity, understanding Alaska and Alaskan issues, understanding of what it means to be civically engaged in the world. And so the way we're suggesting that students would satisfy this learning outcome is by taking one course with each of 3 attributes: civic engagement, Alaska and Arctic issues, and intercultural competence and diversity. But this would not necessarily require students to take an extra 3 courses on top of the courses we've already discussed. Instead, if they chose, they could take courses that would satisfy the previous 2 learning outcomes that have these attributes attached to them. So for example, Biology of the North, which is Bio 104, might satisfy the quantitative literacy outcome and also Alaska and Arctic issues outcome. So students could take one course to satisfy both of these outcomes.
All three. Biology would do all 3.
In the natural science.
But not one course.
Okay.
Yeah. Right, you could also take it for a lab science and satisfy the Alaska and Arctic issues and take something else for your quantitative literacy. And then finally, for students who are completing a baccalaureate degree, integrate and apply learning, some sort of integrative experience. For many majors, this might be a capstone course that the major develops or redevelops and expands, a 3-credit capstone experience. And also courses that are offered at the upper division level that discuss communication in various forms. So instead of a W course where you're focusing on writing and an O course where you're focusing explicitly on oral communication, we suggest that departments develop or revise courses to meet a new C requirement where it's focusing on various kinds of communication but at the upper division level, hopefully within the student's discipline. So that is the outline of the current proposal.
And learning outcome 4 applies to upper division courses. So AA students would not meet learning outcome 4 because it's a 2-year program.
So that's sort of my summary of the current proposal. On this website, gerf.community.uaf.edu, there's lots of information about this proposal. Now, none of this is fixed yet. So one of the pieces of information is, well, how does this compare? How does this new proposal compare to the current core requirements? And so we've sort of set up a table to see the comparison. It's an important change in outlook. And there are some changes in courses, but it's not that big of a change in terms of the broad outline. So you can sort of see the a discussion of some of the changes between the current core and the new core. Also on this website, we have lists of courses that we think might have be courses that could have attributes put on them. So what might courses that have an A attribute look like? But I want to stress that none of the attributed courses that are up here have been approved to have attributes yet, because the proposal hasn't been approved. And so this is just a guess. What might these courses look like? There would be some sort of committee that would be set up to approve courses with attributes. What that committee would look like hasn't been decided yet, because the proposal hasn't been approved. So that's in flux. But it has a guess of, well, what kinds of courses might satisfy some of these attributes? I'm talking too much.
Good job.
What questions do you have? Yeah.
From the sciences, you know, perspective, like you said, it's not a radical change.
Right.
I do like it because it fits a lot of the informative efforts that are going on at the national level from the National Science Foundation of teaching across discipline, and also the civil engagement part. So it means what a lot of universities are going to and what's being pushed, you know, from more holistic profession nationally. But there is a change, as you pointed out. And my question specifically is, most of the breadth courses that were in this, this is going on 25 years old now, core curriculum we live under, are, you know, satisfy a lot of these requirements,
mm-hmm.
and very much like the humanities and other ones, you can see some integration and movement in, because those were other type of courses. But what happens is most of the science major courses do not have those attributes. Like Chem 105 and 6, something like that. So these courses are very narrow discipline, but under the old system, if you took that sequence, it would, you know, do an in-depth experience, and that was a political compromise at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so my question is, how does that, would a major have to take, like, their major biology course, but also go ahead and take, which they should, 104, you know, to get a more broader understanding. Matter of fact, a lot of the comments I've had over the years was the breadth courses were a little bit more exciting to the majors than their major courses. So that's from different perspectives, you know, there's real life applied science.
Right.
So what was your thinking of how that works out with those, you know, that old major compromise?
Two comments. One is, this is only general education requirements. I am not saying anything about what requirements departments might put in or what requirements are in place for the BS degree or for the BA degree.
Yeah.
And so we're not addressing that.
But the major courses satisfy the general education the 105-106.
Your hypothetical with the biologist taking
So a biologist taking a chemistry sequence would go ahead and do it. So they had those. Those were part of the general education requirement. You had to take 8 credits of science, and you could either be these breadth courses, 2 different ones, or you could take a major sequence.
So in this new proposal, the biologist could take Chem 105 for the lab science requirement, and Chem 106, presumably, for the quantitative literacy requirement.
Okay.
But that person would still need the additional 8 credits of a sequential for the BS degree.
Which presumably would be Bio 115.
Yeah, 116.
But they wouldn't... But they could also take one of these formerly breadth courses, if it was approved, you know, to cover one of the other categories you have.
That's right.
Correct. So they could add Biology 104 for the Alaska,
okay,
but it wouldn't count towards their major, per se. Right.
So I just want, I'm trying to get some clarification on the whatever learning outcome one.
Mm-hmm.
So, will basically any social science class count, or for that particular, so two courses in social sciences, any class as it exists now, or will it have to be, and can it be a 300-level class, or does it have to be a 100-level class?
The thinking is that it could be a 300-level class, although 300-level classes are likely to have 100-level prerequisites, which presumably would have met the requirement first.
Mm-hmm.
And the current thinking is courses that are designated with a little S or a little H. But, again, that's something that would need to be decided.
So again, and that's different than, say, the I forget what it was, if it was learning outcome for that with the attributes, which would require going through some kind of review process. So do you see what I'm asking?
I understand what you're asking.
Yeah.
I think we don't have full clarity on this issue. The working hypothesis has been there are already courses designated as humanities and social science in the catalog, and we use those designations.
Mm-hmm.
But would be course by course, not department, but by department.
And there is an assessment for those as is, because new ones are developed. So it could, if it gets approved, but it has to be established still, it could use that same assessment.
My advice is to propose a course that combines Learning Outcome 3 and Learning Outcome 1 for your discipline. To me, that's smart.
Right. Well, obviously, it makes sense to have them be able to double, and they can double up, right?
Okay. Absolutely.
So, which makes perfect sense to me. But Anne, I'm just sort of questioning whether, like, okay, I'm in the history department, so it seems to me that then any history class should really count as a social science, whether it has a little S already or not. So I guess I'm asking, you know, in order to be included in the new curriculum, will those classes that don't already have little S's have to also go through the process?
But we have, actually, Jonathan, it's great that you're here right now.
Good.
Timing. Yeah, can you answer my question? You heard that right.
Diana's question is about the social science requirement and whether any history class would qualify. But we have the Board of Regents mandate about broad-based social science courses, right? And so,
yeah,
so we have
yeah.
to meet that mandate, and we haven't
or decide that we're not going to.
Or decide or try to change, right? So,
right.
So,
yeah, the answer is that under current Board of Regents regulations, no, because they specify broad-based, pretty much survey courses like a 100X.
Mm-hmm.
That's how the Corps came up with those. But there's hope, and there's a parallel movement going on right now through a committee that Leah and I are both involved in, that with representatives from the three major campuses, to try and loosen that requirement so that any history course, any poli-sci, any sociology would apply. So we're hoping to be able to loosen it up in that way. But as it stands now, the Board of Regents regulation is the defining one, and so it's pretty much limited to lower division survey courses.
I would also just say it's super important for the AA students for you to work with your departments and keep it at the 100 and 200 level, and to really put the focus, I think, on the attributes. So talk about civic engagement, diversity, Alaska and Arctic issues with your department, and figure out a 100, 200 level courses for students that will interest them, that they will take, which will help your department, an opportunity for your department to grow.
And there will still be the 18-credit social science and humanities requirement for the Bachelor of Arts degree students, as well as the other quantitative. So that still exists. That's staying the same.
I just, again, the question stemmed from the fact that broad survey was crossed out in the proposal as it stands. So that sort of raises.
Our value is flexibility, so we're going to always try to make things more flexible.
Yeah, and obviously logistically there would be an advantage
mm-hmm.
to expanding that as to saying history is in the social sciences, ergo any history class would count as a social science.
One question is, are there history courses that do not treat history from a social science perspective?
So there are three in the catalog. Just I looked it up because I have a catalog. There are three in the catalog that don't have the social science designator for the Bachelor of Arts degree for the undergraduate. So it has to deal more with research or the perspectives on history. But a research could be perhaps a quantitative literacy, depending.
All right. I get too crazy.
Yeah. So this is one of the things that would need to be refined.
Okay.
And determined, right? We're bringing you a proposal, and you've now pinpointed a place of squishiness in the proposal. And something where we really felt like we needed to be talking to departments to figure out what the right choice is.
Mm-hmm.
And also to inform you and get some support for the other things that would need to be changed for this to really happen. Because right now, you've got two essentially competing philosophies of general education. The much broader, more integrative one that we're working from, that the learning outcomes are based on, and the disciplinary approach that is in Board of Regents regulations. And so what we're looking for is to try to at least loosen the BOR legs at the same time. How things get designated, you know, I know why you were laughing at Leah's question, because historians don't agree.
Right. Sometimes we're in the humanities but at different universities.
Just to follow up on that, first of all, my personal opinion is that ever since NUCOR went in, people didn't pay too much to natural science, social science, you know, designators in the first place, so it's just more paperwork. But on the broad base, the two major paradigms that you're talking about, so it's controversial here, but the Strategic Planning Committee kind of went with the broad base, you know, national trends, which kind of mimic parts. If you guys look at the UAF strategic plan, which departments might not be looking at, but obviously the provosts and deans look at. So you know, as far as where we're going to be in 7 or 8 years from now, how does that fit with this UAS strategic plan?
Yeah, well, it's funny you should ask, because I had not paid any attention to it until I had occasion for a different reason to look at it last night and saw the goal number one fits very nicely with what we're trying to do.
And there's also the emphasis in the strategic plan for having more collaborative efforts with the other universities and to make our general requirements more consistent between them, and this will help with that process.
I'm wondering why you're here and what you're excited about with this, or if hesitant about at all. So that's just kind of a question for the audience and people on the phone. We're all going to be silent for about 10 seconds for people on the phone to ask a question.
Yeah, hi. This is Elizabeth. I'm on the phone, and I'm called in just to hear more about what's going on here. I do have a question. Could I ask that now?
Sure.
Okay, hi, Elizabeth. You probably said this, it's a little bit muffled over the phone, but is it possible to use one course to satisfy more than one learning outcome?
One, two, three, yes.
But you need to have,
up to
one course can satisfy either learning outcomes one and three or learning outcomes two and three, but a single course may not satisfy more than one attribute for learning outcome three, and it may not simultaneously satisfy learning outcomes one and two.
Okay.
Can I write that on the board?
So for instance, you could have a course.
Oh, man, I just saw that right underneath learning outcome three. Note. Thank
okay.
you. It's actually on the website.
Yeah.
Thanks for...
Oh,
good.
I'm sorry.
There could be a course that's double attributed as Alaska and a civic engagement, and let's say it's also a social science. So then the student and their academic advisor would decipher which attribute would be best to use, the A or the Alaska or the civic engagement. But you couldn't use Alaska and civic engagement and social science.
Okay. And is it like... Did you mention that you don't yet have a sort of rubric for what class would satisfy learning outcomes three? Like, let's say I teach a class and I use, like, all my examples come from Alaska, but it's not, my topic isn't just Alaska, you know what I mean? Like, it's a general course, but everything I talk about specifically is Alaska. Like, can I apply somewhere to have it designated as an Alaska issues class?
So, Elizabeth, do you see on the right-hand side of the website integration and attributes?
Integration and attributes. Oh, yep.
Go to Alaska and Arctic issues or whichever one you're interested in, and there's some answer to that question.
Okay.
So the specifics of committees and how and if these need to be voted on or not finished, but this is our attempt at talking about criteria.
And then I would, like, submit it to some committee that would decide whether it satisfied those attributes.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that that same committee then assesses how well we're doing with that outcome and might make changes or recommendations based on student learning and the work that students are doing.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Jonathan. So just speaking sort of hypothetically, I think, you know, what we suggested was a certain percentage of content that was Alaskan, so certainly something that took Alaska in a comparative perspective of some kind would work quite well. So although we don't have rubrics for everything, and the rubrics we did put up there are really more for illustration of what one might eventually look like, those will be driven by whatever is decided are the basic criteria. And there, too, what we have is the best we could come up with before getting the broad feedback that we're looking for.
Okay.
I
do have one more question.
Okay.
If I, let's say for learning outcome 4, if I put together like an, you know, independent study or research project for a student that was Alaska specific, could I satisfy learning outcome 4 and 3 at the same time?
Yes.
Maybe.
It's likely that your student will already have met that outcome, though, if we do it right in earlier classes. But
okay. I guess, again, developing procedures for what satisfying learning outcome 4 looks like and how courses get approved to satisfy that is something we don't have procedures for yet. So I don't know if an independent study always would be deemed to satisfy learning outcome 4 or sometimes or never.
Mm-hmm.
But there isn't any a priori reason that an upper division C course couldn't have an attribute or that a capstone course couldn't have an attribute depending on the discipline.
Okay.
Yeah, if I could add something to that before.
No, go ahead.
We had talked about this, especially with the understanding that some programs and majors have capstones already, some don't, so this would be an additional requirement, that it would be very likely that a capstone would satisfy by definition 4 and carry an attribute. Depending on the content, the mode of delivery, what sort of project was required, it could get a C attribute. And so not only did we anticipate that, but that's probably something that should, you know, that should be encouraged. Whether an independent study would do that, I mean, what I would envision as a process would be one or two things. Would you have a prepared off-the-shelf independent study or a capstone that you would routinely deliver as independent study, in which case it could be vetted and approved for outcome 4 and whatever attribute it qualifies for. If it's something that's put together specifically for a student, well, then it would be petitioned, as you know, as we already do for other existing requirements.
Keep in mind, too, that honor students also have their own capstone requirements. So even if it's not in a major, they could also possibly have that count towards the capstone requirement as well.
Before you, I'm going to leapfrog you.
So biology as a new curriculum has a capstone requirement in it. So that capstone requirement is not a course requirement. It can be satisfied by taking a particular course, one of several courses we've designated as capstone course. But it can also be satisfied by doing a research project in someone's lab and writing it up and having it graded with standard research. So I think what you're saying is to have that count for the new general ed requirement, that a student who went the independent route would have to have that paper. They'd have to petition me for major credit and some core committee for core credit.
Okay. Are you having students who are doing this research in the lab, are they doing it without a course attached to it? Like they're not doing 498?
That's an option. So we purposely wanted to keep it as flexible as possible and to encourage students who have interest in researchers to go and work with somebody in the lab. But so we have it open like that. And they could do independent study in somebody's lab, but they might not even be taking course credits for that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing it over some. We've left that all open.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd hate to. So one of the reasons we went in this direction was because we thought you guys would go in this direction. But if it turns out that a large number of our students are going to have trouble getting general ed credit for capstone, then that would be unfortunate.
I mean, personally, I hadn't anticipated that possibility, but philosophically, there's nothing to rule against that at all. It's the experience and the quality of the experience, not the credits, that really matter.
And we've got it marked as 0 to 3 credits. I don't know if you can read it because it's really small on the website, in part because we weren't sure about what the capstone thing would look like in different disciplines. It's just not. I mean, a lot of disciplines, I'm sure, are going to say, let's take the easy way out, require all students to take our 3-credit capstone course. But not everybody.
I think the big idea for me is that students know, learning outcome 4. I'm remembering that I, in my degree at UAF, it means that I have these 4 learning outcomes. And in biology, this is how I met learning outcome 4. So for me, it's also a dialogue between biology and your students. And that's really important. So if your department is already thinking, which it sounds like you are, you should be involved with helping us figure out the procedures that make that really easy and not a bunch of petitions and going through different offices. Let's reinvent that stuff too.
Great. That's what I want to do.
Yes, a biology student may satisfy it with a certification from their major advisor that they have had the laboratory experience at that. Like that.
Okay.
If Terrence was going to write a history of your road gears and the original core, curriculum, there'd be a lot of trade-offs involved, which you guys are discussing now. But one of the things that I think was definitely not, you might observe, was that there was no mention. This is back in the Mantles Fairbanks flagship campus, rather than just the Fairbanks campus. Have you guys considered the ability of students, because early on in the corporate, rural students had a very tough time. As a matter of fact, we just got 1 or 2 science courses only in the last couple of years, usually breadth courses, up and distance delivered. For them. So we had requirements that was very hard for them to take. As a matter of fact, at one period of time, they had to take their communications requirement from Anchorage because it was distance delivered from Anchorage,
right.
But it wasn't distance delivered from Fairbanks. So I said, have you guys thought about how this will affect the rural campuses?
Yes.
And there is representation on the rural campus on the committee. And actually, this should make things simpler, this new structure should make it simpler for rural campuses.
I think there are some advisors online from these places, so maybe there's a question. I'll wait 10 seconds.
Yeah, this is Cody. I'm an advisor with the Bristol Bay campus, and I was kind of wondering if there have been any simulations, say, of students seeking an Associate of Arts and how they would navigate through getting that Associate's with the offerings that currently are for spring and fall. So getting an idea of if there will be any scheduling conflicts in that regard, as well as a simulation of a student, say, transferring in or out of UAA. We have a few, you know, quite a few students that bounce back and forth. And if there would be any complications, have we come up with those scenarios yet?
Cody, this is Sarah. I think that's a great idea. I think that that should be part of our procedures when we're piloting this to make sure. But since we don't have official courses yet, we don't have departments that are working with us to know what those courses are, because these are just our ideas, and they certainly are not done. And it's almost problematic that we have examples on there, in my opinion.
But, Cody, part of the process has been that we have been really sensitive to the issues of rural students and for students transferring, particularly from UAA or UAS, and that oftentimes with the current core curriculum, what they transfer in does not count for a current core. With this new rubric, it should expand the offerings. So, I mean, not everything may not transfer in, but those should be more courses transferring in that are eligible for our new general ed than under the old core.
Yes, but we should still test those beliefs.
Yes.
And I think maybe having some small stipends or something for advisors like you to do it would be helpful to us, so that the committee doesn't try to imagine this from all different scenarios of all the different students at UAF.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we certainly need that sort of substantive input. We've had those discussions, and they've been inconclusive, but we're certainly aware of the issues. One of the things that we really, you know, want to do and need help with is that, except for the C attribute, which kind of displaces the O's and W's, we are really looking
or brings them together.
We're really looking for as many lower division courses as possible that can carry the other attributes, so that we don't do damage to the current possibilities of an AA student moving into a BA program or a BS program with most of their GE requirements taken care of.
But currently, there are no courses that are specifically only for social science courses, or excuse me, for associate of applied science courses that work towards our core, but potentially there could be. So I'm thinking of the ethnobotany program, that potentially there could be some of those courses that could count as an A attribute. Mm-hmm. If the people, you know, the faculty want to go through the process of getting it approved. So I'm thinking it will actually expand things. So the human services courses, there might be some of those that could count towards the social science that right now
okay.
don't.
Yep.
So.
Just curious, has there been any consideration about this idea of May masters, winter master, and e-learning? Is that all falling under the umbrella and it fits in fine, or is there any special components that need to be thought out?
Do you teach those courses?
Partly.
Okay. Why do you ask the question?
Well, because the future is e-learning and May masters, and then like the block classes, I think that will be part of the offerings.
Presumably current courses that are offered via e-learning or distance delivery, I mean, we offer a bajillion calculus sections distance, and those would continue to satisfy the math requirements.
And there's science courses offered by e-learning.
Right.
Yeah. The May master course that I know of that is in our current core is ethics, and I know a lot of students take the ethics course.
And I did the art music.
Economy. Yep. Okay. So
you think it fits basically, right? That's the idea?
Yeah, it may vary on a course by course basis. You know, I've taught the poli-sci 100X political economy in the May master.
But certain departments,
weeks and it's work.
English 111X will never be taught in a May master.
And then just as a wider perspective, I hear that from colleagues. I don't have an opinion on this, but what I hear is that people say if you make everything equal, all in Alaska are the same, or even outside of Alaska, basically the relevance of the location Fairbanks will decline. Because there's no need for people to come up here, they can take all the classes in Hawaii. So why not being a distant student sitting in Hawaii and taking the classes that we offer, or being in Anchorage for a reason. But is there any consideration of the location Fairbanks or UAF as a campus, how valid and how well it will do under this scenario when we make everything equal in the offering, really, statewide? I mean, do you have any impact ideas on this? I hear that from colleagues, that's what I'm asking.
It's a separate issue, but it's not unrelated, but I think it's, a separate issue. On the one hand, we are still, you know, under Board of Regents requirements for transferability among the campuses. That's, you know, that's no different. You know, it's a problem. E-learning creates those challenges and problems, because I mean, the corollary to your question is, then why bother with UA at all? Well, if you can sit in your underwear anywhere in the world and get a degree program from Arizona State or Harvard or any place in between, and maybe if we are addressing this at all, we're addressing it with the Alaska and the civic engagement attributes, which, you know, which both have in their own ways a sense of place embedded in them.
I think that you caring about that and asking that question means that you should, and it sounds like you know some things where you are, but you should join. You should join us. This is an opportunity, I think, to address a lot of things through gen ed reform. So.
I think
going back to Paul's question is that, you know, when we were teaching new Arctic courses, distantly, we get a lot of enrollment from Hawaii, and because people wanted to learn about the Arctic and part of it. That was, you know, one course. So I think it works both ways, and then people around the world are getting educated with course. But again, based upon accreditation, everything, it's what the Board of Regents and our local Senate and everything says you have to accomplish these things to get a degree from here. So it's not a course-based issue. It's a degree-based issue that's certified by the faculty. It's what a UAF degree or what a University of Alaska degree is. So I think the individual course of it, you know, faculty can say, you know, if you want to take my course, I'm not going to distance deliver it. And, you know, you've got to come up and sit in my office with me for 18 hours a day or something like that. It's the requirements of the civil exclusive.
And on the one hand, you could argue that makes us less competitive in the e-learning world, but we're not competitive in the e-learning world. It's our geographical location. I agree with you.
You know, on the philosophy, we're a destination point for climate change researchers. So maybe the economic model we should be pursuing is what are we really good at and become destination points for those things. You know, what is the uniqueness about history, taking history courses in Alaska and the Arctic?
I was just going to ask if, Richard, you wanted to say anything, since you have made a course that's pretty good.
I think there's so many red herring issues about distance. If we have good distance courses, people will come for them. And I put together a weather and climate of Alaska, so I'm sitting here ticking my box saying this could meet 1, 2, and 3.
Right.
It's a great proposal. My site, you know, how do I get myself certified, and can you please come up with a 5-page form that gets me certified like a grant proposal? Not writing a 25-page proposal to get certified. That would be and in fact, Paul Lehrer has already begun a discussion with science faculty about the current the assessment of our current core science courses, and he is trying to look at is there a more rubriced way to do the assessment than have the arrival of a million different proposals in a million different styles. And I don't know where you guys sit on that, or whether you view that with alarm or with welcome or somewhere in between. But anyway, there is a conversation going on in college and natural sciences about trying to make courses conceptual. In a standardized way, it's a discipline. So people are writing different course rules.
I think part of this will have to be committees have to be their own deal with all the approval processes, and hopefully nice short form will be developed for the committees to sign.
And one of the goals of the new general ed is that it will also be assessed as a whole, so not just that the specific attributes are that outcome one will be assessed, but that the general education itself will be addressed and assessed.
I was looking for your course, yeah.
It's www.gi.alaska.edu.
There it is.
I can just type it in for you. But anyway, what I find, which is curious, is it was a face-to-face class, now distance class. Its enrollment has increased. It's drawing students from UAA. There are significant problems in the Kenai about students getting
science classes, despite what you might read in Sunstar ads back page. There is more discordance in the UAA system. They are much more threatened by distance than we are. I can say something that will appeal to all our prejudices and feel good.
Don't do it.
My impression is that the workload, there are two things. That there isn't maybe the depth to come up with substantive distance courses by tri-partite faculty that will actually attract people. There's the ability to create turnkey distance courses, which have very high attrition rates and generate revenue on the principle that only 40% is actually complete. But if you actually talk about creating engaged, complex distance courses where you say, you're going to come up with scaffolded courses that give people a 60% outcome, and you look at the demographic of that population, are often working parents, they're non-traditional students. And so I get students now coming from the UAA system taking their science course, and I get a lot of working parents in the Fairbanks area. Those are an awful lot of just overly organized working mothers. Cliche, but I mean, that's, who are looking for well-scaffolded courses that they can take in their schedule. So I think I don't come out of this fearing distance that's going to level all things. I think they're niches. Be bloody minded about what niches they're doing for their student population that they'll sell it to.
So just one comment there. We also make a list, so it's a specific class that you're doing. Yeah. And in the niches you can go, but you also need to see the offering like Chemistry 101. We cannot compete really. Can we compete with chemistry or whatever value?
Well, our breast chemistry course completes. It's over enrolled, and we won't talk about compensation for distant science teachers. It's a 4-credit course with 1 credit being a lab is a lot more work than a 4-credit lecture course. For example, the chemistry and context course, the Chem 100, is based on this mixture of science and social science and policies and issues, so it can cover a lot of these areas, and we put in a lab scan in it too. So those courses compete very well. It's a sensor course, a new civil engagement, science education, this location. There are other courses that I totally agree. If you do, let's take the Allied Health Services cookie book, because they got to meet accreditation standards all over the world, they're the same anywhere. And maybe I don't know what biology 115, but Chem 105, those courses, because of our accreditation, you're forced to go ahead and do it the way the national organization wants you to do. So there's a little less flexibility, other than bringing Alaska examples into it. We've got a great, for Chem 100, air pollution. What better a place to talk about air pollution than Alaska or climate change?
Diana?
Yeah, can I just actually, I read this over pretty quickly, and I just had a quick question. Is there one of the learning outcomes that includes sustainability?
Not explicitly.
And if not, why not? That being one part of the strategic plan for the university, and also our new catchphrase, I think I could say here, but I won't.
It was taken out. I mean, it was in there.
Is it there? Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to make sure that there was.
It's really a sideline. Why is sustainability not the major theme of life or of education?
So I can talk a little bit about that, about why it doesn't show up as an attribute.
Yeah.
And the reason why is that we were looking at that bullet, and you see all of those words. And so what we tried to do was to think about all of those important words, those concepts, and think about those in terms of all of our attributes. So as we're making criteria and voting on criteria for those attributes, I think as a university, talking about sustainability and what that means, because there was a lot of conversation on the committee, as I recall, about different disciplines theorizing sustainability differently. So it was very difficult for us, even as a committee, to come together and use sustainability as an umbrella term. So we chose these other terms, thinking that they would encompass sustainability in different ways, and that that could be up to faculty to continue with. So
I can tell you, I've been part of this discussion, and we put it at the major bullet point in the work being sidelined. So I understand there are many interpretations, there are many political views on this, but I still can understand why it's not number one, or like the essence of life and education and sustainable life system.
I agree with you. I agree with you.
It's sidelined. I think it's inappropriate.
Anyway, so that was just one kind of, again, side question, but also, what's the timeline that the committee is on in terms of, okay, you've thrown these ideas out here, they're being discussed, what happens next? And when do you hope for this to go live?
The rough timeline is to craft this into a proposal in the form of catalog language. Early next semester, probably by early February, it goes to the Paris Committee,
mm-hmm.
which we are a subcommittee, and slice and dice, and take whatever's left to the Faculty Senate.
And so it would take another year.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be at that fast rate, actually. It would not be implemented until the fall of 15.
Fall 2015?
And then, as
but
they informed us, there's a 7-year phase-in period for this mm-hmm. time exchange. So students come, well, what that means, of course, is that students are already here get to stick with the catalog they came in with, students who come in once it's in force, and it, you know, it's...
They kind of wait till after the current strategic plan is passed.
So basically, courses, though, like History 100X, would have to continue to be taught for the next 7 years, no matter what, to allow for those students who are...
Yeah, but in the end, I could envision a student who took a really long time to get a degree would just have to petition mm-hmm. to have a certain course count for that.
Okay. Or they may choose
a
later catalog.
Yeah, they can choose.
Because it may be more, I'm thinking from a lot of students, it may be more advantageous to go with the new.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And but if they're like a faculty member that just
done,
wants to keep
right.
teaching
and then they
History 100X,
and then they come back.
You know, but if I was in your department, I would teach History 100X, but I would do different things with it. I would pilot out different attributes and do all sorts of stuff.
But it is sort of an issue. If I know that they're not interested in teaching art, music, theater, 200 particularly, and that's one where I think they want it to go away as soon as possible.
But you still have the humanities.
Okay, there's a question.
Alaska Native Studies that will work.
I'm just curious. I really like the, you know, the flexibility of this plan, and I'm thinking about, you know, the discussion that may have taken place about international or experiential learning outside of the state. So we do study away, and that encompasses national student exchange with students going out to another U.S. university, or of course international if they're exchanging out. And I might even suggest if you're going to be doing some modeling or simulation, maybe we could take a couple of those cases and look at the types of courses the students are doing and how we could apply any of the credits that they might earn. One particular case, students in the current Perspectives on the Human Condition can have to use two semesters of the same non-English language. And so if we have a student who goes out to Sweden, takes beginning Swedish, but then the next semester goes to Denmark and takes Danish, you know, I think we could all agree in the value of that type of experience, and even though it's not exactly the same.
Sorry?
A grand waste of time. It's an inside joke. I'm
okay.
But theoretically, that student come back with two humanities.
Sure.
New.
Yeah. But, you know, if they've already met some of those other, you know, we're just, I think, the maximum amount of flexibility in those cases.
Yeah.
Going back to this, we're just about out of time, but I wanted to make one fast comment on sustainability. If the faculty as a whole thinks that sustainability is really important, then we explicitly discussed it in terms of, well, what about, wouldn't it make a good attribute that students would have to satisfy? Perhaps it would be better than one of the attributes we have, or an additional attribute, choose 3 of the 4, or there.
Yeah.
This is not set.
Right.
We're now at the phase where it can be modified. So just talk to the committee and suggest modification. In general, it talks to the committee, suggests modification.
And put your comment on the site. So there are certain pages where you can reply. Maybe some of you already replied. But you can read comments and get involved in this exciting discussion.
I don't want to start one thing up, but just as a comment, I mean, I think in the state, we don't have a liberal arts college, right? Like an independent college that's doing liberal arts. Like California has these, or Vermont has these.
Like Alaska Pacific? And UAS has that as a mission.
I see that as a constraint. I mean, some people see that as a constraint for the state or for America. But the point is that does that exclude us to start a school called the Liberal Arts of Alaska, let's say, sitting in Deja or something? Is that competing with it, or does it shut it down? Like, how do you deal with the notion of liberal arts as an independent entity at a college, let's say? Is that encompassed in this framework? Or does it really shut down liberal arts? I don't know, that's why.
If it's within the system, like you said, credits have to transfer. If it's outside the system, then the admissions and office has all sorts of, you know, regulations about it has to be from an accredited university and all sorts of other regulations.
The outcomes we drew from Liberal Education for America's Promise, which is a liberal arts. So I think that those values and missions are in the outcomes for general education, as long as we do it right and not just put rubber stamps on existing courses. That's what I fear we do. So
the underlying argument is that this actually gets back to the essence of liberal arts education by de-emphasizing the disciplinary checklists that have come to substitute for what liberal arts is supposed to be.
So the approval, going back to that you mentioned, so especially with AIM number 4, integrated applied,
you know, we have
so that approval level is going to be down at the department head level. Is that what your vision? Because it seems like there'll be a lot of individual things under that.
One of the things, you know, we really have just talked about this very, very superficially. One possible model is the current corporate model. So it's a committee of the faculty senate, perhaps that's a committee for the different attributes.
But it will be up to the individual departments to determine what they're going to use for their major requirements and how any of these courses will fit into the major requirement. So that will need to be determined by the department.
Right.
And then those that look at the degree requirements for Bachelor of Science, Bachelor of Arts, or Business Administration, they'll also need to look at that too.
Right.
And see if they want to make any modifications.
Yeah. Right. Nothing here that requires the, you know, abandoning the current process for department level to college level.
People on the phone? We're about to sign off. Goodbye.
One last point. First of all, thank you very, very much. Visit and revisit the website and find out. Give us your suggestions. So, I mean, that's the most accurate record we have of your thoughts as things occur. Just post it on the website, monitoring carefully, and integrating everything that isn't too.
Within
what winds up being the proposal, and of course, since that goes through the whole faculty senate process, that's a matter for faculty input as well.
So our website doesn't look like the minor comments section.
No.
Okay.
Thanks, everyone.
If you're excited, talk about it though, because we need enthusiasm. Support.